Hi, everybody. Today's Tuesday, July 15th, 2025, and our friend Lasha Kastratze is back with us. Welcome back, Lasha.
Thank you very much for having me back.
Lasha, I want to start with something that's going on in the region that you're now in Georgia.
Correct.
Georgia, not Georgia, the United States, and Georgia, the country,
right.
Georgia.
That's right.
And you know the region, you know what's going on. And recently we had some sort of military interaction, a fight, a war between Iran and Israel, in which, and after all, we've learned that Azerbaijan was used to attack Iran, And later on, we had this sort of chaos between Russia and Azerbaijan. Is Azerbaijan on the path of being a new Georgia, or somehow being something to be, because the way that Azerbaijan is connecting somehow in terms of the north-south corridor between Iran and Russia, and the way that China is thinking about the region, how do you find something Azerbaijan? I mean, we never talk about Azerbaijan. Nobody was talking about Azerbaijan, but somehow it, all of a sudden it's popping up. What's going on, in your opinion?
Sure. You bring up some very interesting points, very necessary points to be heard. So to answer your question, I'll start this way. It's not necessarily Azerbaijan, but mostly, I would say, Armenia that might end up the same way that Georgia ended up in 2008. I would hate to say that. I don't mean to be dramatizing the issue. And the reason I'm saying this is because, first of all, let me just give you sort of an umbrella, sort of a bird's eye view. Okay, so look at the neighborhood. We are in Anatolia nearby. We are in Cappadocia, where the Saint Nino came into Georgia and played a very significant role in bringing in Christianity. We are by the Levant. This is the South Caucasus. Okay, so this is the area that is always on the margins, because in the West, we hear China, we hear Russia, we hear the United States, we hear the rules-based order. We hear liberal internationalism and how America sort of interacts with the rest of the world, and how this affects, you know, Russia, how this affects the Middle East, China. And yet all these, schematically, structurally, this boils down to, it has sort of cells, if you were strategic, on a cellular level, if you will, connects to this region, from the Middle East to what they call sometimes the Greater Middle East, which is the South Caucasus region. So, There are connections behind the scenes that play a significant role geopolitically, geoeconomically, culturally, socially, in terms of sort of creating an understanding sort of drawing sort of geopolitical contours of where the world is heading. But we don't hear that much about this region. We hear, the Middle East, of course, but then the South Caucasus is right there underneath it, if you will, or next to it. And that's where your native country is as well, very close to it, correct? This is Iran. These effects of this sort of structure of the international sort of global system have effects on sort of regional geopolitics. I would even say direct effect on regional geopolitics. So this is sort of the big picture view of why this region is geopolitically important, although certain theories and certain scholars, especially from the realist school, do not much pay attention to it. Now, I'm not saying that this region, if it explodes into sort of regional conflict, caused by or encouraged by, compelled by out in the collective West, for example, right, will have some direct effect on the United States or China or anything like that. But I am saying, you know, this region sort of hides into itself many reasons as to what we are seeing on a global stage. So to answer your question, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Turkey, Armenia, this is the, and Iran, of course, these countries are split. They are split in two geopolitical directions that have a certain effect, that is influenced to a certain extent by geoeconomic strategic sort of calculus. But the key point to remember here is that this region is very much geopolitically, hence security-wise, extremely important and dangerous. So what do I mean? What am I saying here? So we have a split in the region between, Russia, Iran, and what used to be, say, Armenia, when it was under the Russian protection umbrella, and Azerbaijan, Turkey, and then further down the road, Israel. And then we have this Turkic world, advocated, defended, protected by Erdogan of Turkey, who sees his country as the leader in the world of the Turkic culture, of the Turkic civilization, which includes also the Central Asian countries, which comprise the former Soviet republics, former Soviet Union. And now they are former Soviet republics. So this is one direction from which sort of Turkey is pulling this region, which in turn is mostly connected with sort of Israel and collective Western interests in the region. So Azerbaijan, Turkey, and then we are going into the Mediterranean vis-a-vis the collective West. Now we are seeing blatant support of Armenia, for example, by the member of this collective West, one of the major countries on the continent, France, right? So we are seeing this split. Now, Russia is also historically a protector of its own national security interests and geostrategic interests in the region, which includes the Black Sea and the South Caucasus. And so Russia now, the theory goes, being caught up with its adventurism, its invasion of Ukraine through its special military operation, is perceived to have weakened militarily because, and to a large extent, it is true. It is Ukraine presents sort of existential threat to Russia, and it's the most important country right now in which Russia is trying to prevent an expansion of NATO or any other major sort of collective Western influence that Russia fears will potentially sort of shave off Ukraine off of its geostrategic a vision, which will be devastating for Russia. So Russia's resources, Russia is preoccupied with Ukraine. That's a fair argument to make. However, where I'm continuing to stick with my guns is that the idea that Russia is losing its sight, and now that we are seeing sort of this unprecedented sort of rapprochement between Armenia and Turkey, and the story that sort of goes with it, that Armenia is going to sort of Russia is losing Armenia, or that Russia is losing Azerbaijan, or it is losing the South Caucasus. to me, it's not a complete story. It's a very superficial analysis. It's made in a very hurried manner, and I would caution anyone who thinks that Russia is losing its grip on the region, because of obvious sort of increase in power projection capabilities by Azerbaijan with the help of Turkey. So I think that's where I would stop right now, so that this will sink in terms of sort of geopolitical split. So we have the Turkic world that wants to bring in sort of the collective Western influence into the region, which is the sort of 2.0 of what was happening prior to 2008, when before Russia invaded Georgia, this whole sort of liberal internationalist sort of neoconservative movement that thought that would bring Georgia into NATO, right? That first phase obviously failed. So now we are seeing the second phase, in my view, of emboldened Azerbaijan, emboldened Turkey, thinking that, to a large extent, it's justified the way they're operating and looking at the regional role, respectively, of themselves, right? But I would caution that this is the second attempt by the collective West. France is involved, right? Backing quote unquote Armenia, backing Armenia. Into what kind of a strategic and security future, to me, is unknown. I don't know what they're backing Armenia into, but they're acting as if Armenia now can be plucked out of the grip of a Russian grip and somehow made to be a member of the West, although nothing has been determined in this regard. Just like with Georgia, at least with Georgia, they were talking about NATO membership. With Armenia, it's very ambiguous, right? So this is the mosaic now that we are seeing. Now, to the credit of Azerbaijan and to the credit of Turkey, Azerbaijan is a friend of Georgia. Georgia has just like Turkey is and Iran is, Georgia's geopolitics in the region are such that it's got zero sort of problems with neighbors' policy, so to speak, to simplify this explanation. We are seeing now that Azerbaijan, basically what is happening is that the security concern remains to be the same. Aliyev is an extremely clever a leader, and he understands perfectly well that there is only a certain extent to which he can push this, right? He understands that in terms of security competition, Azerbaijan does not stand a chance against Russia. Azerbaijan also needs Russia in terms of economic intercourse, right? There's very much sort of intertwined with Russia, just like Georgia needs Russia for its exports, especially of wine and other products. So to the credit of Baku, with its victory over Armenia and its victory of sort of reinstating its internationally recognized territories within Azerbaijan of Nagorno-Karabakh that Armenia lost tragically. I'm not judging who's what right now. I'm just saying these are the internationally recognized territories of Azerbaijan with military solution took care of it, and now it has sort of restored its full sovereignty, which it hadn't done so since the beginning of the war, since the late 80s and the beginning of the 90s. And so in the Second Karabakh War in 2023, Azerbaijan restored its sovereignty over its territory of Nagorno-Karabakh. The question now is, where does this put the region and Baku in terms of geopolitics, hence security? And just like I said a minute ago, nowhere, it does not create some sort of a revolution in terms of enhancing Azerbaijan's security capabilities against Russia. What it does is it actually shows Moscow that this is not the same Azerbaijan that Moscow has always treated like its younger brother, right? It's sort of, you know, sort of looking at it from the perspective of the former Soviet Empire, as well as from the Tsarist Empire in the early, you know, late 19th century and early 20th century. But that does not translate. This is sort of the sort of misjudgment of this whole situation. This does not translate Azerbaijan into this argument that Azerbaijan has gained enough military sort of power where it can challenge Moscow. Azerbaijan understands this perfectly well that that's not the case, except that regionally speaking, Azerbaijan has made a stance that in terms of geoeconomic projects, Azerbaijan has its say vis-a-vis Turkey, backed by Turkey, that it can determine its own future, its own foreign policy, that is, and act regionally as the most powerful state within the South Caucasian, within the South Caucasus, among the three states, which is Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia. So that's how I look at it. It has nothing or very little to do, and it would be foolish if the calculus in Baku is sort of brewing where they think that they can challenge Moscow militarily. So far, strategically speaking, Aliyev has done a good job. And I hope that this will translate now into some sort of a soft power, geoeconomic power in the region, where all the the South Caucasus as a whole will benefit from it, and Azerbaijan sort of stays away from engaging in security competition with Moscow, which again would be foolish. So this is the sort of a key dynamic here. And then, of course, going back to Armenia, this is sort of this the diplomatic revolution, if you will, where Armenia now visits, Pashinyan has visited, as we know, Erdogan, this is quite new. But then again, if Azerbaijan can have a more calculated foreign policy regionally vis-a-vis its friends in the West, let's just say, again, Turkey and Israel and the collective West, where does this put Armenia? So you see what's happening. So Armenia lost its territory, right? As Armenia has always perceived it. It thinks, I'm not a judge or jury now on where to whom the Nagorno-Karabakh belongs. I'm just going by how the region has been declared and recognized. That's all I'm saying. But the fact of the matter is that Armenia has always considered Nagorno-Karabakh its own. Okay, so now that it has lost it, you see the collective West sort of not only acquiescing to it, but not caring about it at all, as long as it can use Armenia as a yet another tool to sort of push it into creating what exactly is not quite clear. Because again, between Azerbaijan and Turkey, you have a more distinct, clear strategy, correct? The Turkic world supports Israel, and supported by the collective West. Where are they trying to wedge Armenia into this equation is a different story. It's unambiguous. Armenia lost its territories. It's lost the war against Azerbaijan, period. B, the collective West couldn't care less about it. C, nevertheless, it is still using it to make it part of some sort of a strategic vision, which has no fundamental structure underneath it for sort of long-term perseverance, endurance, right? This should also, by the way, be a good lesson for Georgia, because if Georgia ends up losing completely in a similar manner, say Abkhazia and South Ossetia, the two separatist regions, right, that supported by Russia, what will the United States or the collective West be prepared to do? Are they going to turn Georgia into Armenia 2.0, saying, well, look, you just lost everything, so whatever is left of you, maybe we can try to put you into this Azerbaijan-Turkey collective West sort of equation, and then hope once again that now that the territories have been sort of finally shaved off by Russia and nobody's returning those for you, maybe whatever is left for you, we can sort of make you a part of this, split of this sort of Armenia-Azerbaijan, equation, which will be devastating for Georgia, right? So where is Armenia going with this? What is Pashinyan thinking that he's doing is beyond me. But everything indicates, if you absorb from the outside, and that's all we've got, analysts, right? We can only read about this stuff and just look at it and basically, use our wit to sort of come up with a realistic theory in the scenario. In my opinion, Armenia is on the brink of a disaster. If they're going to push Armenia to become yet another instrument of turning it into a battering ram against Russia, right? For the second time around. Well, for the first time around, because Russia has always protected Armenia, by the way. That's another very ironic component of this thing. But the idea that now, Paris, France will defend Armenia somehow, or that it can offer Armenia a way out of the region, especially given its landlocked geopolitical position, to me is yet another chimera that is being sort of crafted by the collective West. So within this dynamic, I think Russia's position is not necessarily that it's been weakened, but that it is sort of looking, sort of taking a step back, in my view, understanding perfectly well that Armenia stands no chance. It's even ridiculous for Russia to think that it's going to invade Armenia and dissect it even further. I doubt that it has gone to that level of thinking yet. Let's make no mistake, it will if Russia sees that Armenia too is turning into mini Ukraine or yet another Georgia. But we are long ways until then, right? But let's make no mistake, geostrategically speaking, I think in the Kremlin, people are pretty confident that Armenia cannot be... They don't look at Armenia as some sort of an existential threat against Moscow, right? Even with Azerbaijan, it's understood that militarily, and that's what matters the most, correct? Sort of the security capabilities of Russia. Geoeconomics matter, of course, but geopolitics and national security matters the most. From that angle, it is also understood vis-a-vis Azerbaijan that Azerbaijan does not present a national security threat to Russia, and therefore Russia continues to focus on what matters the most at the moment, which is Ukraine. Ukraine has always mattered, of course. It's been of vital national security interest for the past 30 plus years, not to mention historically for Russia. But right now, as it is, that's what matters for Moscow the most. So this is basically the picture now, at least the way I view it, of regional geopolitics and mosaic that I think explains that sort of this panic that has been ensued that, maybe Russia is losing its grip on the South Caucasus, or that, collective West is this time around is going to sort of do Russia in and bankrupt Russia. I mean, we've heard these stories before, and there is not a single South Caucasian state that stands a chance against Russia when it comes to military competition or security competition. Geoeconomically, yes, Russia might, because look, when Azerbaijan, when Tbilisi, Baku, Ceyhan, pipelines and gas pipelines and railways were part of the early 90s geoeconomic projects, Russia was pushed out of it. And I always say that geoeconomics matter, but you know geopolitics matters the most. Correct. So Russia is still going very strong in terms of its invasion of Ukraine. In terms of what is, you know, yes, it's sort of going at a snail pace, but it's still going and it's still winning in Ukraine, and it's focusing on it because that's what matters. It's national security of a state. Russia sees it as an existential threat. Ukraine, correct? So, or Ukraine's support, you know, Western support of Ukraine, right? So this stuff in the South Caucasus, I'm not downplaying it. It does matter for Russia, of course, but it's nowhere near to the point where it creates a geopolitical sort of national security military threat.
Lasha, you've mentioned the Turkic world they're talking right. about, but I don't see Russia and Iran having any sort of problem with that sort of concept. But what comes out of this Turkic world would be some sort of Salafism, some sort of Wahhabism, some sort of terrorist acts that can be, these people are so much connected. You go from Ukraine to Syria, you see the lines are all connected to each other. And we know when it comes to the radicalism and Wahhabism, Salafism, they're doing Israeli job. They're preparing for what Israel wants to do to the region. I think one of the main concerns on the part of Iran and Russia is the way that Turkey together with Azerbaijan are giving support to this sort of movement. That's hugely important for Russia and Iran in terms of security.
Yes, another critical point. So when Israel bombed Iran, Iran's nuclear facilities, I'm not going to go into the effects of that bombing, for example. A lot of experts agree. Actually, there is sort of this consensus. There's a split within the expert and scholarly community to what extent Israel did damage and to what extent it sort of pushed back Iran's nuclear program. That's, you know, I'm sort of, with your permission, I'm going to stay away from that, the debate right now. But, you know, it is impossible to talk about this without, in other words, yes, first and foremost, like I've been saying, Israel did this because of its own national security interests. I mean, Iran has been Israel's target now since before the Bush administration and the Iraqi invasion by the United States. We all remember Netanyahu's efforts to influence the then Bush administration to bomb Iran first and then take care of Iraq. And we all know that the list of seven Middle Eastern countries that were going to be lined up to for invasion by the United States in cahoots with Israel. But be that history, be that as it may right now, first and foremost, it was, Israel's, sort of pathological fear that a nuclear Iran will destroy Israel, the state of Israel. Okay. That being said, it is impossible to conduct some good analysis about this without talking about the larger strategic design of the collective West, which is if Iran succumbs to the efforts of the collective West to destroy it, right, to however they manage to do it, most likely militarily, then this will also be considered an effort to surround Russia. In other words, Israel's operation in Iran, backed by the United States, of course, or the collective West, is yet another attempt to surround Russia. This is the effort to take care of Iran, and if Iran falls, then Russia will be significantly weakened. Correct, you know. So Syria is gone now with Assad's regime. Russia acquiesced to it basically. I'm not saying that it was existential, but I think in terms of Iran, it could it could be a very serious blow to Russia strategically, you know, in terms of its influence in the region. So, yes, I would even say perhaps directly this has an effect of surrounding Russia and the region and the South Caucasus because of Iran's proximity to the South Caucasus. So when we talk about, again, when we talk about, and by the way, those formulas, 3+3 formula has already collapsed as far as I'm concerned, which was the three South Caucasian states working with Russia, Iran, and Turkey. Obviously, this was going to be a very much a regional arrangement where, Russia, Iran would probably make an effort to exclude, to keep out sort of the collective West. But that formula has collapsed. We are seeing now that Armenia is has switched, jumped the fence, and now it's becoming friends with Turkey, acquiescing. I think Pashinyan even said something along the lines of, forgetting, the genocide that took place in the beginning of the 20th century, that they were dead set on compelling Erdogan to recognize. And yet now it's all being forgotten for some reason. So you see, these are the important sort of questions that help us gauge, sort of where the region is going and what's causing it. And one has to ask the question at the end of the day, with Iran, what are they going to do with Russia? Neither Imperial Russia nor the Soviet Russia has been sort of defeated based on this strategy, right? Historians, scholars tell us that it was mostly an implosion of the Soviet Union that did the Soviets in. It was even the KGB that did the Soviets in, and not necessarily sort of some grand strategic schemes from the collective West that destroyed the Soviet Union. Competition, perhaps, yes, the inefficiency of the Soviet economy, and eventually sort of the corruption and betrayal, all those factors. But there was not a single geopolitical, geostrategic sort of, device or plan that throughout centuries in the past 200-300 years that was able to which was able to destroy the Tsarist Russia, the Russian Empire, and then the Soviet Empire single-handedly. So the grand chessboard of Zbigniew Brzezinski, for example, that was tried to use Afghanistan as one of the launch pads destroy the Soviets, right? Basically none of those plans really directly had any effect. And now in other words, the great game that ensued, led by the Great Britain, British Empire, which is sort of the simple, a smaller version of what we are witnessing now in the South Caucasus, because again, England, the Great Britain is involved in this as we speak currently. This is to a certain extent, history is repeating itself. But again, the fundamentals, I'm not seeing fundamentals. Where are the mechanisms with which you are going to shave off the South Caucasus from Russia and weaken it strategically to the extent where, some sort of a collective Western security arrangement will enter the region and sort of separate Russia from its southern underbelly and protect the South Caucasus, isolate Iran to the extent where it just, and then in turn isolate Russia and leave it basically all by itself. That these mechanisms just have not worked. We're seeing sort of the collective West trying, right? They keep trying. Now they're using Armenia, one of the weakest states in the region, with which to, or upon which to plan their grand strategic vision of destroying Russia. You know, that's the only way to look at this. You know, if Israel bombs Iran, of course, there is an implication that they're surrounding Russia, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. Okay, and then what? And so what are they trying to do? Israel and Russia do have a good relationship, by the way. Historically, they have had a good relationship. Of course, there has been a competition. But which country in that region doesn't have a competition with each other, right? The idea that I still don't see how either Israel can be used against Russia directly, or even indirectly, And then we have further east, we have China, we have India. Both countries, especially India, through the Jabahar port that runs north-south, which India sees as a sort of a competition against Pakistan, which allows India to go into Central Asia, sort of, you know, from the south to the north, and then vis-a-vis Russia and Europe. India it's not in India's interest to see Iran, Iran's national security sort of being compromised. To what extent India will defend militarily Iran is another question, rest assured, in my view, that economically and militarily there will be some sort of the situation escalated to that point, India will support Iran one way or the other. I mean, it is Iran's oil and energy, that India depends on, and so does China. China is looking at it mostly, in my opinion, through sort of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, extending over to Russia, sort of what Russia will do vis-a-vis Ukraine. China is watching very carefully. China has helped Russia. We know this now. It's continuing to help Russia, and Beijing has declared that it won't tolerate seeing Russia go down over Ukraine against its effort to maintain its strategic national security interests vis-a-vis Ukraine. So you see now these further sort of Eastern powers, regional powers, and we all know the rising China and the concern that the collective West has with it. They are backing Russia, and they do not want to see the region being dominated by, say, the Turkic world, if you will, the Central Asia sort of, Erdogan's vision, if you will, that incorporates Israel for different reasons, of course. Israel needs Azerbaijan for becoming a sort of a logistical launchpad against Iran down the road. Yet another foolish talk of Turkey placing its military on the soil of Azerbaijan. Right. So this is obviously we're talking NATO now. And if I'm not if I remember correctly, at some point, someone from the Kremlin or one of the Russians, Russian politicians, has already mentioned the fact that that everybody has to calm down from sort of abstain from that kind of talk, because, you know, if Russia is kind of tolerating what it's tolerating right now, resumption of the shifting into the talk of discussions of Turkey placing its NATO troops in Azerbaijan, obviously will be a red line for Russia. It goes without saying. So I think any possibility of even using that as a unit of analysis is a non-starter. I mean, it's foolish. So where does this leave the region again? It's back and forth. It's give and take. If Turkey thinks that through its and by the way, Azerbaijan is a Shiite country. Iran is a Shiite country. So this shows you how this region is strictly concerned with geopolitics. No one cares. Georgia and Russia are both, Eastern Orthodox, the oldest Christian nation on earth. It is Armenia, for example. Now look what's happening. So common civilizational, religious, you know, background and history means very little when it comes to these kinds of arrangements, because it's geopolitics first and foremost, and security that matter, right? These two, and then geoeconomics, obviously, just, you know, to make money and to diversify from each other, and that's fine. But the heartbeat of this whole problem is geopolitics, I think. So to go back to that whole point of you know, China watching carefully. China, yeah. I mean, you know, if I'm China, if I'm sitting in Beijing, of course I don't want Russia to collapse on me. And I am looking until the very end, basically, to decide to what extent I really want to get involved. But let's make no mistake, so far China has been on the side of Russia. And India has its own regional problems with Pakistan, and that is sort of a compelling reason for it to back Iran. Unless, of course, if it loses Iran, then maybe China will chime in and replace India, right? You know, in fact, just a few days ago, you know, Afghanistan and Taliban came back again on the radar. Russia recognized, Moscow recognized Taliban regime in Afghanistan. So that tells us a lot. And I think August or September, there will be a conference in China, and China, it will be discussing this, the possibility of recognizing, sort of following suit with Russia in recognizing Taliban regime. Hence, the importance of the Afghanistan as a geostrategic country. So, you know, you see how this entire sort of Eurasian geopolitical space is shaping up. And now that we are seeing, this really futile effort by the collective West to disrupt or weaken Russia once again. In my opinion, even if they had the chance, they should have done it when there was this sort of the unipolar world order, when the United States was the sole superpower, right? And they couldn't pull it off back then. And let's remember, when Russia was down and out, it still managed to protect its national security interests in Northern Caucasus by conducting two brutal wars with Chechnya, right? And now Chechnya is part of the Russian Federation. So I would caution sort of regional leaders here to be very careful in terms of how excited they might get with more foolish promises coming from the collective West, because collective West is not losing anything here. They will just encourage you to do foolish things, and then you are the one who is going to be the sort of receiving end of that tragedy, which in Georgia's case occurred in 2008 when Russia invaded Georgia and basically recognized Abkhazia and South Ossetia. And as I always say, then Georgia went from bad to worse when it came to its geopolitical and geostrategic position. So I really don't see any place for Armenia here in terms of in terms of being invited into some sort of Western architecture of security or economics even. I think Moscow is a sleeping giant. It is preoccupied with Ukraine, and then it will remember. It's got a long memory, and it will remember who jumped ship when, when Russia was sort of when Russia was facing its most difficult days with Ukraine, and then I would say Russia will act. It has done so, by the way. In 1853-56, when Russia basically lost the Crimean War, it rebuilt its Black Sea Navy within 5-10 years. And then through the Gulistan and Turkmenchai I believe it was treaties, respectively. It got back, the areas that Iran controlled in the South Caucasus. So the idea that somehow these small countries in the South Caucasus are going to be helped enough where they will receive security guarantees. I mean, how many more times does history have to teach us that just is not in the cards for these small states? And I give some credit to Georgia too, by the way. Although I wish Georgia was more proactive in terms of regional foreign policy, you really don't want to hide either, right? You don't want to be some sort of you don't want to hide either. You have to have your own defined foreign policy. Of course, first and foremost, you have to define it in terms of survival of your own state. That goes without saying. But then you have to be engaged in geoeconomics and this, north, south, east, west sort of geoeconomic projects, where Georgia has been sort of relegated to the second place now that Azerbaijan is is the key player within the South Caucasian states, and Georgia has no problem with it. Obviously, it will never have a problem with it. What I'm saying, where Georgia stands now is just that it's an extremely passive, sort of phlegmatic, if you will, foreign policy where it really is, to the extent that there is such a thing as being too cautious, where you actually paralyze yourself, you paralyze your foreign policy and make it sort of inefficient for yourself. That's where Georgia needs to sort of look into and figure out ways how to become pragmatic, keep pragmatism, of course, but then at the same time, figure out ways how to be more assertive and more proactive when it comes to geoeconomic projects.
Lasha, when you compare, in my opinion, Azerbaijan can be compared to Georgia or Armenia, even less than these two, but they're not comparable to Ukraine, the power that Ukraine had before the war started. And I don't know why they would do this to Russia and even to a larger extent to Iran, because this is the security of the region. We know that Russia and Iran can somehow not go through Azerbaijan, the connection through the Caspian Sea from Russia to Iran. But after all, that doesn't solve the security issue with Azerbaijan and Armenia. Do you see the way that these two countries, right? I would say that they're not that much powerful, but they're so important in terms of geostrategic concept of the region, the way that they can be used against Russia. This makes them so much important for Russia. Do you feel that, is there any sort of lesson to be learned from Ukraine for these two countries? Or they're not, there's somehow so much delusional about the picture that the West is trying to draw for them?
I would say that the lessons, I would say the situation, if you want to compare Georgia and potentially what's happening with Armenia, they're almost analogous. If you want to compare sort of Armenia being enticed into the same path as they enticed Ukraine or Georgia into back in 2008, that led to 2008 or led to 2014 and then to 2022. Azerbaijan is slightly different. Azerbaijan always had more power politically and militarily, and earned more deference from Moscow, in my view, although Moscow viewed all three republics as its satellites all throughout the Soviet era, of course, and it continued so in the post-Soviet era. With Georgia stands no chance to resolve its geopolitical problems, its territorial problems militarily. And obviously we saw that Azerbaijan not only stood its chance, but it acted on it because of support to a large extent by Erdogan and Turkey, as well as You know, I would say to a large extent, its legitimacy and its respect and its sort of help with from Israel. You know, Georgia doesn't have that political capital. You know, it's a much weaker state. So if we were to compare the three states, I would say Georgia, Armenia first would make for a good sort of comparative analysis as to what not to do. Mind you, you know, Baku waited for a long time until it was sure militarily that it could take Nagorno-Karabakh, that it could stand Nagorno-Karabakh. And then it also waited strategically, understanding full well that Russia was sort of tied up in Ukraine, was going to be tied up in Ukraine. You know, so Georgia never had, even let's just take, for example, let's just imagine the world in the South Caucasus where Azerbaijan and Armenia had no beef and it was just Georgia. In my opinion, you know, even under the current circumstances with Russia's sort of entanglement in Ukraine, Georgia could not have done anything comparable to what Azerbaijan did with Nagorno-Karabakh. I mean, Azerbaijan's victory in Nagorno-Karabakh is will be written in history books in terms of swift, resolution of the conflict that had gone on for 30 plus years and was filled with sort of collective pessimism. Everyone thought that it was just Russia was the key player and in controlling and balancing the two countries against each other to its own benefit, and unless Russia ever sort of pressed that green light, Azerbaijan would never regain Nagorno-Karabakh. And then we saw in 2023, how it did it all by itself, basically with the help. But with the help from Turkey, and then regional circumstances also played into it. Of course, deference that inevitably, Moscow showed to Erdogan. Moscow needs Turkey, of course, and so. You know, this whole Turkic world led by Erdogan, of course, put Russia in a disadvantage. Again, that disadvantage ends with the military superiority of Russia that it has on all three Southern Caucasian republics. There are notions within the international relations, sort of collective, sort of psychological views where, oh my God, without Russia, Nagorno-Karabakh will never be resolved, or without, with that logic, can South Ossetia and Abkhazia conflict within Georgia be resolved without Russia? Plausibility of that, is it plausible? No, because Georgia has no regional legitimacy in terms of help from middle powers like Turkey, regional powers like Iran, for example, right? Azerbaijan had that from Turkey. And so there's a possibility, but their possibility is, I would say, 1%, right? It's not even worth sort of looking into. So it's not plausible for Georgia to exercise its own foreign policy and regain militarily the separatist regions. I would compare it mostly with in par with Armenia. Azerbaijan is far beyond Georgia in terms of its military, power projection capabilities. So now the question is, where is Azerbaijan headed? And here is the challenge, I think, the next challenge for Aliyev is that he has to realize that, and by the way, Baku's principled stance that Russia apologize for the downing of the passenger airplane, or that Russia apologizes for the abuse of that family in Ekaterinburg that Russian security forces raided, and you know, two Azerbaijani nationals, ethnic Azerbaijanis, were killed in a brutal sort of an operation that everyone says was a very brutal operation. The accusation of which is that back in 2001, these families were committing crimes, and Russia finally caught up to them, and so they really conducted this brutal, ruthless operation. Well, yes, see, that's what I mean when I'm talking about Azerbaijan sort of lifting itself off, you know, being this sort of, you know, a younger brother of Moscow, where it says enough is enough. We have the capacity to protect our citizens and to act on it. And we demand apology from the Kremlin. And not only that, but they acted on it, right? They were not afraid to do what they did in Nagorno-Karabakh. They're openly within the geostrategic camp of this Turkic world, they're openly are willing. By the way, I haven't mentioned Zangezur corridor, to act on their interests in this vitally important corridor that connects the mainland Azerbaijan with the Nakhichevan exclave, which is on the other side of Armenia. They're willing to act on that, and they're working on it also. And where is Russia in all this? Russia has always maintained control of the region, of that corridor. And now let's just imagine the world where they will manage to push aside Iran and Russia from this, correct? Georgia is distant second. I wouldn't even put it in the same category in terms of its capacity to project power to meet its national security interests. What Georgia can do is to engage, within this split, this geostrategic split, and figure out a way how to become more proactive without basically damaging any one of the regional neighbors' interests get in the way of regional interests of any one of the neighbors, especially that of Russia's. So, you know, this is but overall, though, this region is important, again, not because necessarily speaking of Georgia, but because of its location. And when we look at China, when we look at Russia, when we look at Israel, right, when we look at the Middle East, generally speaking, it has a almost direct connection to the region. Sometimes it can erupt. There's always that possibility, the danger, that specter of the region being contaged, the Middle East sort of contaging the South Caucasus, engulfing it in its own problems, nevertheless, it's part of the geostrategic, geopolitical wave, if you will, that is constantly present in the neighborhood. This is what makes it very important, because the facts are on the ground. We are seeing now how, you know, Israel's attack on Iran directly affects the South Caucasus and Russia and Georgia and Azerbaijan and the Turkic world and Turkey itself, right? And so, Zangezur corridor, by the way, is one of the most clear, examples of this. Isolating, and we all know there is an effort to basically, yes, there is. Maybe you can tell me more about this, the Aras River corridor, which is the alternative offering. But then again, let's not kid ourselves. Mostly, what matters is the Zangezur corridor. We are seeing the effects of what's playing out in the outer limits, right, geopolitical and geostrategic limits of the overall region, let's just take the Middle East, the Levant, and then how this sort of starts to, you know, creep up to the South Caucasus. That's why, you know, that's why this is this region is giving has always been part of the upheaval, sort of the flashpoint, geopolitical flashpoint of the vicinity of that region.
Yeah, you mentioned the Aras Corridor. The Aras Corridor is connected with Azerbaijan, the Azerbaijan part of Iran. But the region is so much complicated, Lasha. Yeah. It's so much. I think we're going to hear a lot about the region in the coming years because everything is just moving from Ukraine to the region, to the Central Asia, and to, as you mentioned, to the greater Middle East. And what's because of Israel, because of Iran, because of Russia, and the way that they're doing right now with the case of Turkey and Azerbaijan, and I think a lot is going on. And we have, we have to talk about it and more. And,
if I may, just finish it on a very controversial point. If Iran got a weapon, the weapon, I think the entire region would stabilize within 48 hours. You would not have these adventurisms. If Iran ever got the bomb, so to speak, then regional stability would set in almost immediately. Right? So that's the irony of the nuclear deterrence. You know, it's an extremely difficult puzzle to be solved, and to what extent by bombing each other it will be resolved is another question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're running out of time, Lasha. Thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
Thank you very much.
See you soon, Lasha. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.